This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Yes, it's back again. Sadie's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back?
Final hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. More reaction from the first 2 days of the SEC Media Day is coming up here throughout the hour. The Morrow Midday Show brought to you by Baker Roofing. They have been in business for over 100 years, and they're one of the largest, most recognized roofing contractors in the U.S. Baker Roofing provides residential and commercial roofing. In 1915, they were founded on the promise of always good work, and they've done that. So give our friend Matt Johnson, general manager at Baker Roofing, Charleston, a call, or head on over to bakerroofing.com. For more information, check out their incredible history and to see all the different roofing types that are available. BakerRoofing.com. Check them out. Over 100 years of always good work. Baker Roofing, bringing you the Morrow Midday Show each and every day. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. ESPN Radio Charleston. However you listen to your podcast, just search us there. You can also find the show podcasted online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Or through our free app. Just search ESPN Charleston in the App Store, and that allows you to listen to the show live and on demand. I was just going through I'm in these different group chats with friends of mine, and in the commercial break, take a look at the phone, see what's going on while I wait to talk more sports. I saw a buddy of mine who I went to college with was talking about this situation where somebody else that we went to college with, a girl that we went to college with, is getting married next month. Now, weddings have been crazy here with COVID and people rescheduling. So this friend of mine from college went out to dinner last month with this girl that we all went to school with, and he's closer to her than I ever was. But she said that they have their wedding. She's getting married next month. 350 invites went out for this venue that fits about 315, and she told this person at dinner, if we get enough no's, we'll invite you to the wedding. I feel like that's almost a slap in the face. That's like one of those backhanded compliments. Like, it sounds good, but then when you think about it, it's not very good. That's letting you know you're like on the JV team. You're the backup. You're plan maybe C at this point. Because you know those invitations that went out at this point after a rescheduled wedding from COVID, they probably were not the original 350. People have probably already said no, or things have changed in the last year or whatever it is. And so, okay, well, then let's replace them with this person. Then you send those invitations out. And now you're saying, well, if we get enough no's, all right, we got you on backup. You're on call. You may get invited. At that point, I don't think I would say anything. And I know they're friends, right? So maybe, I guess you're close enough, you could tell somebody that. But I don't think I would let somebody know that, where they stand in the hierarchy of wedding invitations. I would just, if we get to that point, all right, send them an invitation. See if they want to come. Maybe she was broaching the subject to see if he would be interested to begin with. Otherwise, not even waste her. You know, you need your backups. You have to find out, like, who can I invite if we need people to fill the venue? Let me see if they would be interested in coming. At that point, just invite random people, like, from wherever you're getting married, from around town. Hey, want to come to a wedding today? Sure, I got nothing going on. I'll be there. Well, let me go get a nice meal and go do a little dancing. I always feel like that's insulting. You tell them, like, if we get enough no's, then you'll be invited. You're not invited to the wedding now. Only if we get enough people, which, by the way, it's not like one or two. You need, like, 50 no's. You need 50. You need, like, 20% of the people to say, no, thanks, I don't want to go. I can't go, or I don't want to go, or whatever it may be. And then, okay, now we're on to you. You didn't make the top 350. You're probably cracking the top 400, though. So now you can come to our wedding and bring us a gift, please. I'd say, yeah, no, I'm good. If I didn't make the original cut, I don't want to go there. I'm not going to your wedding if I'm not on the original invite list. Otherwise, don't bother inviting me.
How about this? Mm-hmm. Instead, next time you're up in that area, throw a big soiree and do the same thing to them.
If enough people say no, they can't come, then we'll invite you. Then we can have you come.
Yeah, you're second string, all right?
That's right. Yeah. You got to let them know. Even more so. I think this is like third string. Now, again, right, if you have a good enough relationship with somebody, then I guess you feel comfortable. But also, I would say, if your relationship is that good, shouldn't they be coming to your wedding already? Like, shouldn't they have been on the original list? So if you're close enough with that person to tell them, like, hey, you're kind of the plan C, right? If we get enough no's, then you can come. Shouldn't that person already be coming to the wedding? Shouldn't they have made the original invites? I think that's a slap in the face. Just like when people say, well, you outkicked your coverage. They're not complimenting you. Yeah, they're telling you you got, like, a beautiful wife, or if people say that to women about their husband, you got a good-looking man. But they're not complimenting you. You really outkicked your coverage. What they're telling you is that, you know, you're not very good-looking, and the person you're with shouldn't be with you. They deserve somebody better. Wow, how did you get this person? They look a lot better than you. That's not a compliment either. Same idea. Same energy. Person tells you, like, hey, want to come to our wedding in 2 months? Okay, well, we need enough people to say no before we think about you, before we get to your name on the list. You're all the way down here around number 400. So, and I think my buddy's considering it. I think if he gets invited, I think he's going. I say, forget that. That's an invitation right there. Now, you tell me that, all right, you don't want me to be there. I'm not going. Maybe I should cut some slack because it is, you know, because of the pandemic, things have gotten crazy with these weddings, scheduling them when you can, then people can't make it, others may not be interested, so you're just trying to fill the venue. But if somebody tells me that, I'm saying, you know what, don't worry about it. I'm not interested in going. We'll get to more thoughts on the SEC coming up. You can always join the conversation, 843-721-9500 to give us a call. Let's go to the phones. Marshall is with us. Marshall, what's going on? How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great, buddy. Here's my take on that.
Yeah.
If I got nothing going on, I'd go to the wedding, and I'd enjoy myself, and I wouldn't even take a gift.
Oh, okay.
That's my thought.
That's pretty good. I like that. So you still get the good time, you still have fun, and then they don't get the gift out of you. So I like that. That's good thinking.
Have a good one, buddy.
Appreciate it, Marshall. You know what? Now I'm coming around to this whole thing. All right, I can be petty. All right, I'm going to come to your wedding. I'm going to have a good time. I'll eat the salmon, whatever, bougiest item you got on that menu. I'll have the steak. I'll do some dancing. I'll take advantage of that open bar. But you're not getting anything out of me. You're not getting no gift out of me. That seems fair. Because you weren't originally you weren't on the original invite list. And they expect you to bring a gift. Which also, to me, I've always said, if you don't go to the wedding, same idea. Like, if you can't go to the wedding because otherwise, right, then you just invite all sorts of people that you know can't come to the wedding, just hoping that they send you gifts. In fact, King of Queens did a whole episode about this, where they don't want to travel, you know, like the 6 hours to the wedding. And they said, well, you still have to send the gift. And they thought, what, send the gift? We were never going to come to this wedding anyways. You just want the gift out of us. So that's another little thing, right? If you're not going to the wedding, unless you're really close with them, but they're just sending you, like, oh, I got invited to this wedding? I'm not going. Right? They're just trying to get the gift out of you. And we know nowadays gifts really are just money in envelopes. That's all people want anyways. I'm telling my buddy, don't worry, don't go. That's an invitation. But now Marshall with a good idea. Go, have fun, make a scene, have your Shirley Temples, hit the dance floor, and no gift. That could be a fun time. Hey, Sankey, who's talking? He brought up the word that you never want to hear, forfeit. In fact, let's re-rack this, Joe. Can you grab that Greg Sankey number one clip? Sankey, at least a threat yesterday to teams in the SEC because right now more than half the league is under the vaccination rate that Greg Sankey is looking for. And his warning yesterday, hey, if you can't play this year because of COVID, we are not going to be rescheduling all these games, playing Tetris with the schedule like we did a year ago. Here was Sankey yesterday.
Your team needs to be healthy to compete. And if not, that game won't be rescheduled. And thus, to dispose of the game, the forfeit word comes up at this point. That's not a policy. And what you see are the bookends now for decision making.
Sankey yesterday at the SEC Media Days. And I had said earlier, we talked about this to open the show, I agree with that thought process. You can't be rescheduling all these games and trying to, especially now that we're playing non-conference games. Right? Last year, there were no non-conference games. And there were built-in off weeks. You built the schedule to handle the pandemic that you knew, if we have to move some games around, okay, we can do this. Speaking of having that plan B, like my buddy is for somebody's wedding. Same idea with the schedule. The commissioner knew, like, okay, if we have to move these games, we have this week here that's still available. We can move some games there. All right, if this happens, we could do this. If this happens, let's do this. That's not the case this year. We have non-conference games. We have all of the conferences involved with one another. We got a schedule that the other conferences aren't going to be waiting around for you to catch up to, you know, for the playoff. We're trying to get back to normal. And I agree with Sankey that the better solution is probably just, all right, we can't play this game. We're moving on. We can't try to figure out how to get all 11 games or 12 games in here in this window and move these games around and push this game back and slot this game in and take your off week, your bye week, and put this game over here and send you over here. No, we can't. We have a vaccine now, right? We had to do that last year because we had no solution. That was the best solution. Now, there's a better solution. Get the vaccine. When SEC teams reach 85% vaccinated, they don't get tested. They don't have to wear the masks. The protocol is much looser. It's not as strict. So there's not as big of a concern for all this stuff because you have, quote unquote, this herd immunity, 85% for these teams. So hit that number and we won't have to worry about all this. Now, those comments from Sankey yesterday may have been nothing more than that threat, hoping that he never gets called on this bluff, that the vaccination rates are lower than he would like to see. Season starts in about a month, so here's his maybe last-ditch effort to try to drive those numbers up before the season. Because, again, when you tell coaches that there's a chance they could lose that game because of something like that, because of positive COVID tests, I'm sure those coaches go back to their teams trying to encourage them even stronger to go get vaccinated. Because the last thing Nick Saban wants is to have to forfeit a game. Could you imagine that? He would never have such a thing. So it could just simply be a threat. Could be some sort of bluff that he's getting. Next month, let's get these numbers up. But at a certain point, push may come to shove, and we will figure out how the SEC would handle it. And now that he's on the record saying that, when it comes to September and a team has a COVID issue, do we think Greg Sankey will go back on that word and say, that's okay, we'll push it to the end of the year? Once you bring it up like that yesterday, I think you have to stick to those words and lean on the forfeit option this football season, which is fine with me. We have a solution out there. You have a way to try to avoid this. If you don't, this is the risk you run. And if the other team can play and you can't, you forfeit, we move on. But if there is a conference that can navigate these troubled waters, I trust the SEC and Greg Sankey more than the others. We saw it last year, and I think we'll see it again this year. But imagine, on a Saturday, Alabama, Georgia, Florida, even the Gamecocks, some team in the SEC has to forfeit a game because of COVID, and they take a loss. It would be a very interesting scenario, how it would affect rankings, the college football playoff, all this sort of stuff. Just the standings in the SEC, because you talk about trying to win the division and go to the SEC championship if it came down to some sort of forfeit. It would be very interesting. Now, we saw it in the NCAA tournament. We saw it in the College World Series as well, essentially, right? Forfeits because of COVID. Other college sports in the postseason. So it's not necessarily something new for college sports. But in the SEC, the idea, it means more. And then you're going to have these games have to come off the books and forfeit because a team can't get out there. But I don't know a better option. I would not want to try to finagle the schedule all year like you had to do a little bit last season. It's time to try to get back to some sort of normalcy here. There's the vaccine. There's the option for you. Let's play these games when they're supposed to. Let's get through this season instead of moving all these things around and bending over backwards for some of these teams who are not reaching that vaccination rate set by Greg Sankey. And you may not agree, but he's the commissioner of the league. Those are the rules he set, and you know, those are the rules that you kind of have to follow. That's the number you have to reach to avoid some of these issues. Right now, only 6 of the 14 teams have reached that number. We'll see what happens in the next month. We closed out last hour doing a Tuesday Top 10 where I ranked the top 10 quarterbacks, and I won't give you my whole top 10 list. But in the top 5, I put Miles Brennan of LSU number 5. He was injured last year. I think he'll be the starting quarterback this year. I think he'll have a good year. Takes care of the football. Last year, only had one turnover-worthy throw in a short sample size. I put Emory Jones of Florida at number 4. Emory Jones has spent 3 years there with Dan Mullen in that system. He was a 4-star recruit, originally committed to Ohio State, flipped to Florida, has sat behind Kyle Trask, is uber athletic. That helps get out of jams. Dan Mullen has worked well with athletic quarterbacks. I think Emory Jones is in for a big year. Dan Mullen has always done a good job with quarterbacks. From Tebow to Dak Prescott to Kyle Trask, he has turned guys into NFL quarterbacks that we did not see coming. And Emory Jones, I don't know if he'll be an NFL quarterback, but he will be the next one to impress playing under Dan Mullen. I put Matt Corral at number 3 of Ole Miss. A lot of people believe he'll be the number 1 quarterback in the SEC. My one concern is that boom or bust potential. Remember his, 5 interception game last year against Arkansas? He's a bit of a gunslinger. Lane Kiffin's an aggressive coach. They throw the football a ton, and there's the chance for some things to go wrong the more times you put the ball in the air like that. He was the fifth most accurate passer downfield last year. He's got a good arm. He'll take chances, a good throw it down the field, but it also could lead to more turnovers, more issues. I think that's the concern for Correll. Now, if he takes that next step and he's consistent and he plays lights out every week, then he will be the best quarterback in the SEC. But I think every once in a while with that offense, with that coach, with that arm, he'll get himself into some trouble every once in a while. He'll have huge games, and then he'll have other games where he'll throw a bunch of interceptions. Bryce Young, I put number two at Alabama. Third highest-rated recruit in Alabama history. He's stepping into a situation where he'll be surrounded by tons of talent. He was a higher recruit than Mac Jones. We saw what Mac Jones just did. I think Bryce Young will be fine at Alabama. But I put JT Daniels at number one for Georgia. Now, Kirby Smart yesterday at the Media Days was talking about JT Daniels, believing that he is finally the quarterback that can win him a championship. This from Michael Collins when he joined us on the show Friday. He covers Georgia. And Michael Collins was talking about JT Daniels and how if they had him a couple of years ago instead of Jake Fromm, Georgia would already be national champs. Here was Collins on our show on Friday.
I think they're absolutely one of the best teams in college football for 2021. I think the general consensus is there's a very good possibility. This is the Georgia team that can finally make fans forget about 1980. This is a Georgia team that is built 100% solidly on offense. There's very few holes in that offense at all. They've got a good offensive line coming in. You've got a great quarterback. You got great running backs. You're stacked at wide receiver. Offensively, I think they're going to cause a lot of problems for a lot of teams. Defensively, there may be a few questions because of some guys that left the program. But, again, it's a solid unit. You've got great coaches that have brought in consistency to the program. I don't think this is a do-or-die season for Kirby Smart and Georgia, but I do think this is a season where people say, okay, let's just get it done this year. Let's quit messing around. Let's quit knocking on the door and being almost, and let's just go through and win that championship. And I think JT Daniels is absolutely the quarterback that can – lead Georgia to that. Nothing against Jake Fromm, but I think if JT Daniels is our quarterback a few years ago, Georgia's got another ring.
Michael Collins here on the show Friday. JT Daniels could be the guy to get Georgia over that hump. Kirby Smart said something similar earlier today talking at the media days for the SEC. And I discussed this yesterday in the show, and I don't know if I articulated it as well as I wanted to. Sometimes the words don't come out, you know, the way you thought them up in your head. But I compared it to a couple of different things. I have compared Georgia to, say, the Dodgers of recent years, or Gonzaga or Baylor as they found themselves in the national championship, or to somebody like a Mississippi State or the Bucks trying to win an NBA championship tonight. And we thought that they always have the pieces, but the one thing holding them back was just their history. That, oh, they can't do it. And when you look at Georgia, right, on paper, they stack up as well offensively as any other team. They have the quarterback. It seems like if there was ever a year that Georgia could win a national championship, on paper, it could be this year. But the reason why you may not want to pick them is because, well, we've seen Georgia. They always come up short, which really isn't a fair reason. Different players, different year, different games. But we're all guilty of that, myself included. And a lot of times, we can be right. The Dodgers can continue to blow those big games. Chris Paul can continue to blow series. Giannis, for a while there, continued to come up short in the playoffs. Eventually, he figured it out. Chris Middleton stepped up, helped them out. Things can change, but there's a reason why these teams do come up short. But I compared it yesterday to my experience in minor league baseball, where teams would always tell you as you're trying to get jobs, ah, you don't have the experience. I was like, well, if everyone keeps telling me that, I can never get the experience. And my point being, if we're always going to doubt these teams, then we will never see the championship coming. So we may say the same thing this year, that, oh, Georgia, they can't do it. They won't get over the hump. But there's at some point, when Baylor wins a national championship, when the Dodgers finally win that World Series, when the Bucks win the NBA championship, you never saw it coming because you didn't believe it could happen. And we usually have to see things to believe them. So my point being, if Georgia does win a championship, we won't see it coming because we won't expect it to happen. So this could be the year that they get it done, and we just won't see it coming because we'll keep saying, yeah, but it's Georgia. It's Kirby Smart. They can't get past Alabama. They can't clear that final hurdle. It's been 40 years since they've won. But they may finally have that quarterback to get the job done this year in JT Daniels, and we just may not see it coming because we choose not to, because we usually have to see something before we believe it. But if you always have to wait to see something before you believe it, then you can never predict it happening for the first time. And that could occur this year with Georgia. Coming up, expectations for the Gamecocks. Shane Beamer, of course, spoke yesterday at the media days there in Alabama. What are his expectations to start his tenure at the Gamecocks? What should they be? We'll get to that next. It's the More Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Coming up, expectations for the Gamecocks under new head coach Shane Beamer. Get to that here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Beamer spoke yesterday at the SEC Media Days. Always love this song from The Who. It's a great song. And I always think of the scene, funny scene from the show Freaks and Geeks about 20 years ago when the daughter, played by Linda Cardellini, wants to go see The Who. And so the parents listen to the music because the parents, the show takes place back in, what, the 80s, I think, 70s?
I think around 79, 80 time frame.
Yeah, and so the parents were, you know, uptight. They didn't like the rock and roll. They didn't like that she listened to the Grateful Dead and The Who. So they said, all right, let's listen to the music and see if we feel comfortable with him, with her going to go see The Who or listening to this music. And they put that song on. And the mother is very naive, so it's very funny. She's like, oh, this sounds nice. They're singing about an accordion. And it's a real funny scene played by Joe Flaherty's the father, who you may remember from Happy Gilmore. He was the guy that always tried to – he was Shooter's lackey. He always tried to make things tough for Happy. That actor, funny guy, he's the father. And he starts flipping out because he knows it's not about an accordion. And it's a funny scene. And I always think of that whenever I hear that song. Good show, Freaks and Geeks. Only lasted for a season, but that was, you know, James Franco before he was known, and Seth Rogen, and Jason Segel, and Martin Starr, all these guys, Judd Apatow was directing the show 20 years ago before they all became movie stars. Good show. Anyways, SEC Media Days continuing. We'll get to more reaction from the coaches throughout this afternoon before we go. At the top of the hour, Dan Mullen had some comments about the schedule in the SEC. And I actually agree with Dan. And Shane Beamer also, of course, had his first media day yesterday as member or as a head coach of the Gamecocks. So we'll get to a couple of things that he said yesterday in just a sec. But I do want to remind you that if you ever have a problem around the house and you think, I can't fix that, don't worry because the Canty Foundation Specialist can. Check them out online at CantyCanFixIt.com or give them a call, 843-484-3625. Because Canty knows how tough it can be to find a contractor that you can trust. So they offer warranted solutions and a free, no-obligation estimate for all foundation repair services. And this time of year, you're outside, you got the shoes off, you got to protect your toes as you run around in the yard. If you have concrete around your home that's cracked or uneven, such as a sidewalk, driveway, patio, or pool deck, the Canty Foundation Specialists offer the repair options you need to help you protect the look of your concrete, the value of your home, and the integrity of those little toes as well. Contact them for a free estimate today. The Canty Foundation Specialist. Online at CantyCanFixIt.com or give them a call, 843-484-3625. All right, here was Shane Beamer. We have two different cuts from Beamer yesterday. This was part of his introduction. By the way, he's learned well from Dabo with these opening. His opening monologue yesterday, opening comments, was about 7 minutes long before he got to questions. But here is one of the things Shane Beamer had to say yesterday as at his first media day as head coach of the Gamecocks.
I'm excited to be back in the SEC after 3 years gone. This is my 13th year as an assistant coach, now head coach, being in this conference, and there is no conference in America like this league. I've been a part of multiple leagues, and the passion, the intensity, 365 days a year, the way this league is covered, there's nothing like it. I couldn't be more excited about being back here. I've told Greg before, when I was in Oklahoma working as an assistant coach, I had a TV in my office, and most days that TV in my office was on the SEC Network and watching Paul Feinbaum and watching Peter Burns and Alyssa Lang and people like that. So certainly was working to get my job done in Oklahoma, but definitely always had an eye on this league as well. Want to thank Greg Sankey for his leadership. He's someone, he mentioned it in the introduction, but someone that I've had a lot of respect for a long, long, long time. Being back in this conference now as a head football coach, that respect for him has only grown in the 7 months since I've been back in this league. Being a part of Zoom calls with him, with the other head coaches, and following his leadership. Fortunate for his leadership last summer and allowing us to have a college football season, and the way the path that he led throughout the country along with some other commissioners to allow us to play. So certainly thankful for his leadership.
And I was critical of the Shane Beamer hire at the time, but the one thing I've always said is that you want a guy who wants to be there. And it's been clear from day one that this has been the dream job for Shane Beamer, that he doesn't want to be anywhere else. And you appreciate that as a program. Just like in anything else, if you're in a relationship, you obviously want to be with somebody who wants to be there. Not that just settling, or they figure like you're a stepping stone, right? They're looking for the next best thing. They're only with you now until they find somebody else. You don't want to be in a relationship with that person. You want somebody who will really genuinely wants to be in a relationship with you. You want an employee who really wants to be part of that company. They're not just there because it's a job. For a lot of people, that's the case. You have to take a job just because you need a job. But you really appreciate when you have an employee that, you know, loves being there, loves working for that company. You appreciate it. They appreciate the company. It works out well. A coworker, right? You're working on a project with somebody. You want somebody who's actually passionate. They want to be there. It's not just like a job or a paycheck for them. They actually care about what they're doing. So you certainly get that with Shane Beamer, and it comes through in all of his comments. And you knew he was going to do well yesterday. He's a well-spoken guy. He grew up son of a football coach, so he knows what it's like to be there handling the media. Well-spoken, well thought out, has a good way of handling the tough question. Oh, that's, you knew he was going to nail it yesterday. Doesn't mean a whole lot in the big picture, but it is something this offseason, just another thing to get Gamecock fans excited about their new head coach, to get excited about the plans he has for this program. Now, if he goes out there and he wins only two games a year for the next 3 years, it doesn't matter. But in the offseason, he's doing a good job of building the excitement. Like that photo he replicated yesterday of Steve Spurrier at the Arby's soda machine, which is fun. He seems to be a fun guy. He's involved in social media, all that good stuff. That's what you like. It helps in recruiting. I'm not a South Carolina fan, so it doesn't do much for me. I know everybody was loving Shane Beamer. I know he was just having fun. There's no meaning behind it. I don't want to be the old man yelling at the clouds. I get the idea of creating that classic photo of Steve Spurrier. My thing would just be kind of do your own thing, though, right? Like, yeah, obviously we know he coached under Steve Spurrier. He was here working with Steve Spurrier. We always talk about getting the program back to how it was under Steve Spurrier. I know that's the goal. It's the plan. But go be your own person. Do your own thing. And I know he wasn't trying to be Steve. He was just, you know, recreating the photo. But my whole thing is, let's not be living in 2010 with all the Steve Spurrier stuff. Let's do our own thing here in 2021 and build up the program. It may be very similar to how Spurrier did it. But I don't want to see all these Spurrier replications from 10 years ago, as successful as he was, and Beamer was part of that. Go out and be your own man as coach of the Gamecocks. What about expectations? Here is the second cut from Shane Beamer yesterday talking about expectations for this program he's taking over.
Yeah, well, one, love our fan base and love the passion that they have, and they expect to win, and they expect to win big, and that's what you want. You want to be a head coach at a program like that that has those kind of championship expectations, and we've proven in the past at South Carolina that we can reach that level. Now we're working hard to exceed that level. But, you know, I was hired for a reason, and frankly, this was a two-win team last year, and that 2020 is behind us, and we're moving forward. But to say that we don't have holes in the roster and issues that we need to get right would be naive of me to say. But I love the players we have in the program. I love the way that they're working right now. I said it up there earlier. My dad used to always say, as a head coach, if you're good in the kicking game and you're good on the O-line and D-line, you got a chance to be successful. We are. I like our young talent. I like the way that we've improved this team. We did have some roster issues when I got hired. I feel like we've attacked those and improved those since I got hired. And I'm looking forward to getting out there and competing and being the very best team that we possibly can be this season.
Shane Beamer yesterday obviously wouldn't put any sort of number on it. You wouldn't expect a coach to do that. They don't want to pigeonhole themselves. Or they say, expectations, oh, 6 wins. Because then anything short of that, the first question is, right, you know, you didn't reach expectation. Was this season a disappointment? Or why didn't you reach expectation? You're going to get questioned for it. You never want to put a number on it. So Beamer wouldn't go that far. But you heard what he said about expectations for year one, or to start his tenure as the head coach of this program. Now, Josh Pate, friend of the show, has his podcast, the Late Kick Podcast with Josh Pate. This is a long clip, but worthwhile. He answers that same question. What should expectations be for South Carolina now under Shane Beamer? Here's how Josh Pate looks at it for the Gamecocks.
Getting the roster situated, and that's in the immediacy. I would have a recruiting plan in place, or I would want to see a recruiting plan in place that consistently allows us to pull one or two upsets a year on the trail that we shouldn't, in conjunction with our overall level of recruiting floating somewhere in the 10 to 20 range, which makes us competitive every year and puts us in any 2 to 3 year period in position to build to a team that's capable of beating Georgia, capable of beating Florida. This, again, is in any given year. I wouldn't say we can never win the SEC. I wouldn't say that, only because if you would have said that about Clemson, you would have been wrong. I'll grant you they're in a different conference, but everything else, resource-wise, geographically, like these places are not all that different. I know you guys don't want to hear that, but those places are not all that different. My point is, if Clemson was able to rise, South Carolina theoretically is able to rise. It's a multi-year deal, though. And so the baby steps first are to be able to, when someone in Tucson, Arizona, asks someone else on the street corner, hey, what is South Carolina football? They have an immediate answer. There's something identifiable, uniquely so, about South Carolina that college football fans know coast to coast. Because if the fans know it, the players know it. If the players know it, they're more liable to commit there. The next thing they need to do is they need to have a solid NIL plan. That could be the tiebreaker on some of these things. And the third thing is Shane Beamer has to have been the right hire. Now, we don't know, obviously, because he hasn't coached a game. And we also can't debate it because it's already happened. But if he is a guy, the culture fit we always talk about, if he's a guy that the community and other coaches start buying into, then that means it becomes a destination as opposed to a backup option, which professionally some people would probably view South Carolina as. And all of a sudden, South Carolina feels the same as North Carolina does right now. But I wouldn't sell myself short. I wouldn't talk about what is or isn't possible. I just focus on the process of getting it done and making sure the culture's in place, which is going to be the most important word around any program. But if Shane Beamer's the man, he's not going anywhere, first off, so you'll have him locked down forever. And secondly, if he is the man, I don't know what the limit is for South Carolina. I mean, it's not like they're coaching out in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. They're tied to this region just like everyone else, and recruits know that they exist. They just don't view them as a destination like they may in the future if some of these things start falling into place.
Josh Pate talking about the Gamecocks and their expectations. He touched on a few things, right? Recruiting. Well, so far, the Gamecocks have had more commits since June 1st than any other team. He said, be in the 10 to 20 range. Right now, they're in that area. Also said you have to get some recruiting upsets, right? Beat out Florida or Georgia on the recruiting trail. That stuff is still to come. Also, name, image, and likeness. That's important for all schools. And as he said, the other important part is to make sure that Shane Beamer is the right hire. We'll find out. He can win the offseason, but it's mostly about winning the regular season. We'll see if that happens. He also mentioned culture. As I've always said, culture, just win. People always say, we have to fix the culture. What they really mean is we have to win more. Right? Oh, they have a bad culture there. What that means is they don't win enough. That's what culture is tied to. Winning solves all. It's a happy locker room when you're winning. It's an upset locker room when you're losing all the time. Now, to compare them to Clemson, certainly in terms of resources, but we know the SEC is tougher than the ACC. And it's also will require some patience. It took till year 5 of Dabo for Clemson to win 7 conference games for the first time. And since then, they haven't been able to be stopped in the ACC. But that was the 5th year. Right? In year 3, there were 500 in the ACC. So can Beamer get them to the point? Maybe, but it will also take, you know, about 5 years. This is not some sort of quick sort of turnaround, and next year they should be winning the SEC. If they do get to that point, it'll take a little time. But the team to look towards was referenced there by Josh. They're in the ACC, but it's not Clemson. It's UNC. And how has UNC done this? It started with Mack Brown. They got the right coach. He then brought in Sam Howell, who flipped from Florida State. They got the right quarterback. And that's been most important for UNC. So for South Carolina, you have to get the right coach. They believe they have with Shane Beamer. Then you have to find the quarterback. You hope it's Luke Doty or whoever you bring in next. But like anything else, and those are always the two most important parts of any football team, college, NFL, whatever. Have the right coach. Get the right quarterback. UNC has, it looks like they have, and now we're talking about UNC as a top 10 team in the country a couple years after they won, whatever, 3 games. For South Carolina, tougher conference, but same region and a similar idea. You get the right coach, you get the right quarterback, you too can elevate your stock like Mack Brown has at UNC. Coming up, Dan Mullen with a little bit of a complaint on the SEC schedule, but I think he's right. We'll get to that next. It's the Moore Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Coming up, Dan Mullen with a little bit of a complaint about the SEC schedule. But I agree with him. And we'll get to that here on the Moore Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. I want to tell you about Lyerly's Dry Cleaners. Now with their to-go service, they can pick up or deliver right to your home or office. They handle shirts, suits, casual wear, as well as curtains, comforters, and regular old household laundry. Call or text them 843-377-6994 to schedule a free pickup. You can track your dry cleaning, see exactly when it'll be ready or delivered. And the best part, mention that you heard about Lyerly's right here on ESPN Radio of Charleston and get 20% off your next order. Lyerly's Dry Cleaners, easier than ever before with their to-go service. Dan Mullen was one of the coaches who spoke yesterday at the SEC, day one of the SEC Media Days. And Dan's always been a guy who will speak his mind. He was asked about having Alabama come to Gainesville for the first time in a decade. And here's what Dan Mullen had to say yesterday.
I don't get the commissioner in trouble here, but, you know, I mean, I'd love us to maybe do away with the permanent crossover team and so you get these type of games more often. I think for the players, for the fan bases, I really think it's exciting to see some more of mixing up the teams from the West and playing two different teams. Each year instead of a permanent crossover. I think that'd be really exciting because so you get this matchup. So it's going to be an exciting day. It's going to be a great atmosphere. It's going to be a fun game to be a part of. And as you said, you know, for 10 years we haven't seen it. You'd love to see that more. I mean, well, there's teams that'll visit. There's non-conference teams that are going to visit the Swamp a lot more than conference teams. And I think you would love to see maybe a better rotation of those teams.
I agree with Dan. He makes a good point there. Isn't it crazy that non-conference teams will play there more frequently than conference teams? This is the first time in a decade Alabama is playing in Florida. They're both in the SEC. Why does it take a decade for that game to happen again? I think it's crazy. And I like the idea, and I brought this up last year. I've talked about it before. I thought the pandemic may bring it out. But add an extra game to the SEC schedule. If you want to play 12 games, do 3 non-conference, 9 in the conference, and roll with that. And so the way that would work is you have 7 teams in the other division, right? So let's just stick with Florida because Dan Mullen is the coach that brought this up. So if you're Florida, you play all the teams in the East Division, of course, and then you play 3 West Division teams each year. Now, there are 7 teams in the West. So if you come up with a rotation, it'd be nice if there were only 6, but we have 7 teams now. So if you do a rotation, you'll play each team at most or at worst every 3 years. And then you can alternate home and home, so that means they'll come to your building, again, at most every 6 years, but more likely every 4 to 5 years. And if it's every 4 years, that means every kid in that class, assuming that they stay all 4 years, and not everybody does, they transfer or they go to the NFL, whatever. But if you're at Florida for 4 years, then theoretically you will play not only every team in the conference, but you'll also get to play them on the road and at home for just about every team. There'll be a few exceptions because there's that awkward 7, so there'll probably be a team or 2 that you don't get to go play at in your 4 years, but you get to play everybody. You get to play them, and you get to play them home and home. You get to play them in your building and their building before you graduate. I think that'd be great. It's what the NFL does with their schedule, that you know if you're a fan of, say, the Atlanta Falcons. Okay, we're going to play the NFC East this year and the NFC West, whatever it is, or the AFC East, AFC South. And you know that every since you play 2 a year, right, every 3 years you'll play a certain conference. Every 6 years you'll go to their place, they'll come there. They'll come to you. So you know, if you're a Falcons fan, hey, within the next 6 years, we're going to play in Cincinnati, just to pick a random city. And they're going to come here and play in Atlanta. And you can expect that. And 6 years isn't that large of a window that every 6 years you're playing a team twice. You play them once at home, once on the road. You could do something similar in the SEC. I think it's crazy that Alabama comes to South Carolina once every 12 years. They're both in the SEC. I think it's crazy that they go to Florida once a decade. They're both in the SEC. And in that case, Florida, Alabama, those are two of the best programs in the country. You should want them to play more often and not just in the SEC championship. Have them play in Gainesville. What an atmosphere. Have them play at Alabama every couple of years. It'd be better for the conference. I don't care about these cross-division games that need to happen every year or whatever. Enough of that. Let's add an extra conference game and add a better rotation so we can see these teams play each other more often. I like the idea from Dan Mullen. We should get Florida, Alabama in Gainesville more frequently than once a decade. We're missing out as football fans. It'd be a better product if we got that more frequently. 843-721-9500. Let's go to the phones. Tim is with us. Tim, what's going on?
Not much, Luke. How are you?
Doing well. What's up?
Finally get to call you. It's been a while. I think the last time I talked to you, we talked about cannolis.
That's right. Yes.
Well, you kind of answered my question because I was going to say, you said, why is it that Alabama hasn't been to Florida in 10 years? I say, how long has it been since Alabama's been to Carolina? And I'm not a Carolina fan, but I do follow them because they're an in-state school. And I'm like, how long has it been since Alabama actually went to Williams-Price Stadium? Has it been 12 years?
What was that year when they play them? It's been about a decade, right? I'm trying to think of the exact year, but it was, around 10 or 12 years ago.
Yeah, and see, I'm a Clemson fan, and like I said, I do follow and see what Carolina's doing. I like to root against them mostly, but the thing is I look at what you're talking about, and I look at the ACC. They play each other on a regular basis, home and home. I don't see where you see a 10-year hiatus from one place or anything like that. You don't see – you see North Carolina and Clemson play, but it doesn't take 10 years for them to have a home and home.
Right. Yes.
You know, Florida State comes up here. We go down there, you know, Miami, whatever. You're right. I don't understand why the SEC doesn't do better on that part. They're a great conference. You would think that they want to make that conference stronger by playing each other and at each other's place.
Right. I agree with you. I think it'd be better, and we're up against it, Tim, so we got to let you go, but appreciate the call. I think it'd be better for the conference, better for football fans. I was trying to think. I knew Alabama came to town recently to Columbia. I thought it was this past year. It was 2019, which, man, that was already 2 years ago. It feels like I thought it was this past season. But prior to that, it was a decade. I know. Bobby's shaking his head. I should have remembered the year, 2009. It had been a decade since they arrived. It'll probably be another decade since they come back to town. It should be more frequently. We'll wrap up your Tuesday when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Put a funky finish to your Tuesday afternoon here in the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. Search ESPN Radio Charleston however you listen to your podcast, or online at charlestonsportsradio.com. We were just talking about the SEC schedule. I know Mark Stoops, head coach of Kentucky, is against more SEC games. He said, I don't know if anyone noticed, but last season a lot of teams in our league struggled. That's not a good enough excuse for me. To stick with the Alabama example, they just played in South Carolina for the first time in 10 years. They haven't played in Kentucky since 1997. Even though they play Tennessee just about every year, they haven't been there since 2006. They're going to Florida for the first time in a decade. They've been to Vanderbilt once in 14 years. They've never played at Missouri since they've joined the conference. What are we doing here? They're all SEC teams. Why are you only getting a team coming to your building in the conference once every 14 years? It's crazy. I agree with Dan Mullen. Life is a series of hellos and goodbyes. For now, we have to say goodbye. We'll say hello again tomorrow at noon. It's the Morrow Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.